The original house consisted of one room on the south, another room on the north, and a stairway that went up between to the unfinished upstairs. The south part was the kitchen, dining room, living room, and the north part of ground floor was the parents' bedroom, and the boys slept upstairs. When they decided to remodel this, it was in the fall. They had a basement dug on the east side, and it was only under the new part of the house. Somehow there had to be planks from the south side of this open hole to a support at the door going into the kitchen. And what I remember about this was that I would run and slide on the ice and catch hold of the door going into the house. This was not something that my parents encouraged, but I did do it. The new part of the house then consisted of the kitchen and the bedroom, and there was the upstairs was enlarged too. To put on a, there were two bedrooms upstairs before, and then there was a second bedroom added, and what we call the storeroom, which was where the spare bedding was kept. And in the fall, Dad would go to town and buy sacks of flour and sugar to last through the winter, and he'd store those up there. But I do remember that part of the remodeling. One of my memories of a crew doing carpentry work around there at the house, there were some men who were working there. It was fairly cool in the morning and got warm in the afternoon. They had a ladder lying on the ground, and they put their coats in it. And the cats had found this place, this warm place to lie on top of the men's cats. Well, I was in and out and back and forth, and I went out one time, and one of the men said to me, "Do you know your cats lay eggs?" Well, of course, I argued with him. "Well," he said, "look under those cats." Cats were lying in the one of the coats that were on the ladder. I lifted the cat up, and sure enough, there were eggs under there. Well, the men, of course, had gone, one of the men had gone to the chicken house and brought the eggs and put them under the cat, and they had to entertain themselves somehow with this little girl that kept going in and out, and I went to the house. Sometime later, Mother saw me leaving the house with something, holding something in my apron or the skirt of my dress, and she investigated and discovered that I had several eggs there. Well, what was my mission? Those guys wanted to believe that cats laid eggs. I was willing to join the conspiracy, and I was taking those eggs out to put under the cats on the ladder. So Mother put a stop to that one. There was a cistern Dad had on the south side of the house, and when the remodeling was done, they built a porch out over the top of that cistern, made an entryway to the south so that we could go in and out through the porch and over the step. I remember Dad washing out box wagon in the wintertime, pitching up the team and going up to the west range where there was good grass and the snow banks were clean, filling the wagon with snow, coming back, taking off the east window of the porch and throwing the snow into the cistern. He did that until the cistern was full. Mother melted snow, poured it down through the middle until she had a hole big enough that she could use the pail and the rope, which we used to pull the water out of the cistern, and start getting that snow water for us to drink. We had good cold water to drink because there was snow in there sometimes as late as the 4th of July. One of my earliest memories of the new house is having been put to bed by my father in the evening. I got to sleep in the downstairs bedroom, and he'd take me to bed, get me into my nightgown, hear me say my prayer, and then he would put me in the bed, tuck me in, cover me up. And very often he would lie down on top of the covers beside me, whereupon I would say, "Daddy, tell me a story about when you were a little boy." Well, he had lots of stories about when he was a little boy in Pennsylvania, and I loved to hear them, but he also had usually put in a big day's work. And so, in the middle of a story, he would doze off, and I would gouge him with my elbow and say, "And then what, Daddy? And then what?" Dad's stories of Illinois, of Pennsylvania, were interesting to me. And then Mother had stories of her childhood in Illinois, which was very different from Dad's, but very interesting, and she could make them very amusing. When she was a little girl, about the size I was when the carpenters tried to fool me with the eggs, they had somebody doing masonry work at the farm where Mother and their family lived. For some reason, the mason decided to stay all night, because he had more work to do the next morning. Now, he enjoyed teasing that little blonde girl who was full of all sorts of questions and missions and whatever. But the night that he was staying there, he took his shoes off and left them outside the door because there was cement dust on them. And at the same time, he left a little wet cement that he'd been working with a little distance from the house. Well, little Ada discovered all this, put two and two together, and decided she would play a trick on him since he would give and tease her. So she thought she'd put the cement in his shoes, and then he'd have to dump it out in the morning before he could go back to work. When he got up the next morning and was going to put his shoes on, he discovered that the cement had set up in there. And Grandpa Ott had to take him with the horse and buggy to town to buy a new pair of shoes. Now, Mother was mischief, had lots of good ideas. On May Day, for example, the kids of the community would go around with May baskets, and they'd go to a house and knock on the door and leave a May basket, and the kids in the house would chase them and then go on with them. And they'd go to another house. The mother knew they were coming to her house that May Day, so she went down along the lane and hid under the hedge, waiting for the other kids to come with the May baskets, and then she's going to jump out and scare them in the twilight. Which she heard them coming. She crouched there, and just as they were going by, she rushed out and grabbed somebody by the leg. She looked up, and it was the first black person she had ever seen. There were some missionaries that had been over in Africa, and when they came back, they had brought this black young man, boy, with them, and he had been invited to go out with the rest of the kids to take the May bath. Well, he had never seen a black person, and he had never been attacked by a little blonde-haired girl. And what was the most amazed or frightened was anybody's gift. But it was one of Mother's favorite stories about her childhood. Now, there was a story that this black fellow was very agile, and when he was in purple with the family that he'd come back with, he never opened the gate. He just went up and jumped over the fence. Oh, another Mother's story was about when on one Sunday. Now, Grandpa Ott was a very devout Christian man, and his family went to church twice on Sunday with the horse and buggy. So they went in the forenoon for church. Then after milking and early in the evening on Sunday, they changed clothes and went to church again with the horse and buggy. Well, Mother had helped with the milking, and she had changed her dress and went to church. That time, at prayer time, the congregation knelt for the prayer, and she glanced down and noticed that she hadn't changed the shoes that she'd worn when she milked cow. She was mortified. And so while everybody else was praying, and she was on her knees anyway, she descended to her hands and knees and crawled out of the church and went out and sat in the buggy until after church was over. Another of her stories is about the time she took the twins in the buggy and took them to town for whatever. It was only a few miles from their town, from their home to Whipple. On the way home, the buggy horse was anxious to get home and was moving at a pretty brisk trot when Mother, for some reason, was distracted and dropped the line. So there she was in the buggy with these two little children and a horse that was in a hurry to get home. She crawled out over the front of the buggy, onto the tongue, got hold of the lines, crawled back in the buggy, and got the horse to stop. Now, she wasn't that much of a horsewoman after she was married, but desperation did strange things for Mother when she was taking care of her twin brother and sister. Another of her stories was about her father. He was a very devout man and was definitely the head of the household. One Sunday, they had a hired man working for them, and the hired man wanted to go hunting on Sunday, but Grandpa said, absolutely not. Well, the hired man, somehow, he slept upstairs and had his gun in his room, climbed out the upstairs window, and in the process shot himself. This was a real traumatic event for the family. Grandpa was very serious, full beard, and very much like my son Tom looks now with his beard and slender face, but Grandma had never seen him without beard. He was wearing that when they got married. Well, he went down, got a funny idea, went to the barber shop, had his beard shaved off, came home with the horse and buggy after dark, knocked on the door. Grandma opened the door, and he asked if he could stay all night. And she told him, no, that she didn't have a place for a stranger to stay. Needless to say, she did take him in when she found out who he was. Grandpa had a sense of humor. He was definitely the head of the family. And the children called him Papa, very respectfully. They called him Papa. Except Uncle Gene, who was kind of inclined to be the black sheep of the family. And one time, he referred to Papa as Dad. My mother told that she went off in her bedroom and cried because her brother had been so disrespectful to their father. Uncle Gene was a daredevil of sorts. He was the one that climbed up on the windmill. And then in town, he climbed up on the water tower in town. He was one of the first to fly an airplane. His son Forrest was an outstanding pilot in World War II and was involved with the Berlin airlift. In the early 1920s, the Ott sisters were quite scattered. Mother was on a homestead in western South Dakota. Aunt Elsie was taking nurses training in Chicago. Aunt Velma was teaching in Illinois. And Sue and Florence were raising families there. Those sisters started a round robin letter. And I wish I'd saved some of those early ones. But that round robin letter is still making the rounds among the descendants of the Ott sisters. From Alaska, where Bill Countryman's daughter writes in it, to Florida, where Aunt Florence's daughter writes in it, to Oklahoma, where Uncle Gene's daughter writes in it, South Dakota, and points in all over the United States, those descendants of the Ott sisters are still writing in a round robin letter that makes the rounds at least twice a year. Now back to some family history that was going on while the round robin letter was going around. Mother was in the hospital in Hot Springs with a new baby, Joel, born November 12, 1918. When the news came to the country that an armistice had been signed for World War I on November 11th, Mother was amazed to hear the fireworks and the celebrating that was going on in town in Hot Springs, and she thought that was a big fuss to make over a new baby. When she was released from the hospital, she came to Olitz on the train and out to the homestead by horse and buggy. Now, Olitz had a good doctor at that time, Dr. S.K. Merganian. He was an immigrant from Armenia who had taken his medical training in the United States. He took a homestead east of Smithwick in 1909. And then moved to a farm southwest of Olitz, where he had a modest clinic in town near the post office. He raised his own herbs and made his own medicine. No need for childproof caps on that medicine. It took one parent to manipulate the nose and chin while the other parent handled the bottle and spoon. Weak kids healed up quickly so we could quit the medicine. Dr. Merganian made all his calls to the rural homes day or night with a horse and buggy. And he was credited with saving many lives in the flu epidemic of 1918. In July 1921, he drove to the Rickenbach homestead to deliver baby Dawn. Now, sometime later, there was a financial crisis after World War I that hit. And there were banks that were feeling the pinch. Now, Dad owned some shares and stocks, whatever, in the bank that was operating in Olitz. And one time he got somehow a clue that the bank maybe wasn't in real good shape. Now, about that time, he met up with a man in Olitz who told Dad that he sure wished he could get some stocks in that bank. Now, Dad said, "Are you sure you want some?" Well, yes, he was sure. He really was sure. Dad said again, "Are you sure you want stocks in that bank?" "Yes." "Well," Dad said, "I have some stocks in the bank, and I'll just trade them to you for that Willis Knight car that you're driving." It was a deal. They shook hands. Dad took the car. The other fellow took the stocks. And unfortunately for the other fellow, the bank did close sometime after that, but Dad had a car. So before I was born, Dad took me to Olitz, or took Mother to Olitz, and had made arrangements for Mother to stay in the home of Mrs. Van Horn, who lived next door to the doctor's office. So I was born at the Van Horn home. Dr. Merganian came there, and we found later on in Dad's papers, after he passed away, we found a canceled check he had written on August 21st, 1924 to Mrs. Van Horn. I think Mother stayed there all night after I'd been dragged unwillingly into the cold, cruel world. And Dr. Merganian apparently received his check for $5 after the alfalfa seed was sold that fall. Sister Elsie was born in Chagrin, October 19, 1928. Now, Brother Joel has given a good history of the Forney School, 2 miles from our home. Schoolroom was heated with a coal stove, which was quite temperamental. Teachers lived in the, quote, teacher room, a modest, sparsely furnished room off the classroom. We saw smoke coming out the windows and doors when we approached the schoolhouse on a cold winter morning. The place wasn't a fire. The smoke just wasn't going out the stovepipes into the chimney. One teacher initiated a hot lunch program by setting a dishpan of warm water on top of the stove that stood in the middle of the classroom. Students could bring soup or cocoa in suitable containers to set in the hot water. Occasionally, the silent monotony of the classroom was interrupted by a cork blowing out of a heated bottle and bouncing off the ceiling. A book could be written about those rural schools. My elementary school years were the drought and depression years of the 1930s. Alice Fink, who taught my first through fourth grades, was an excellent teacher. After that, we had three men teachers, Thomas O'Dell, Floyd Wilkerson, and Dale Lovell, all of whom were four-year college graduates at a time when 1 year of college was all that was required for a teacher in a rural school. But in the mid-30s, our district paid $65 a month when others were paying $45, and those well-educated men were thankful to have a job. A few years later, Floyd Wilkerson was the superintendent of the high school in Olitz, and Dale Lovell had gone on to be an instructor in the armed services for several years. Now, Mother did Dale Lovell's laundry 1 year, for which he paid her $5, and Mother was going to use the money to buy a new Easter hat. Dad said it was needed to help pay the taxes on the land. How far would $5 go to pay taxes on land now? My memories of the 1920s included the birth of a baby sister, Elsie, in 1928, and Dad's purchase of a Waterloo Boy tractor and an Atwater Kent radio. In my childish mind, I wondered what water had to do with either a tractor or a radio. The radio was battery-powered and required an aerial wire stretching from the roof of the house to a board attached to the barn. As I recall, the only station available was WNAX Yankton, which incidentally is still in operation. Besides the news and weather, we were able to enjoy the music of Lawrence Welk Orchestra, George B. German. Now, George B. German sang Strawberry Road and Yodel. Max sang his version of Strawberry Roan and tried to yodel, but Dad objected to the yodeling. Max said, well, your ancestors came from Switzerland and people yodel there. Dad replied, that's why they left. A pleasant memory is that of sitting around the living room in the evening listening to Lum and Abner, Fibber McGee and Molly, Amos and Andy, all of whom our father enjoyed as much as we kids. Later in the 1930s, a less pleasant memory was that of the war developing in Europe. I found something else to do while Dad listened to the news of war overseas and national politics as Franklin Roosevelt ran for an unprecedented third term as president. Memories of the mid-1930s involved a drought and financial depression. Unemployed cowboys who owned nothing more than a horse and a saddle rode from ranch to ranch hoping to find employment. Word spread that Mrs. Rickenbach was a good cook with a kind heart. I remember a time when Mother routinely set an extra plate at the table for the noon meal. anticipating that some young fellow would tie his horse to the fence before the meal was over. Each one left his hat on the porch, addressed our mother as ma'am, and thanked her as he left. One of the regulars was an itinerant named Shorty Sanford. One day Mother went to town for groceries and on her return reported that Shorty had obviously had access to some bootleg alcohol, this being Prohibition days, and was emboldened to serenade her with his musical rendition of 15 Men on a Dead Man's Chest, Yo Ho Ho, and a Bottle of Rum. She ignored him, and he left. Another time Mother was in town, and she was in the grocery store when Brainerd Renshaw came. Now, Brainerd was an alcoholic and with a sad past. He got a bottle of vanilla, which was high in alcohol at that time, and took a drink and then turned to Mother and asked, "Ms. Rickenbach?" Mother tried to ignore him. "Ms. Rickenbach?" "Yes, what is it?" "Are you going to have to live with Oris and all them kids all the rest of your life?" Mother replied indignantly, "Well, I certainly hope so." "Oh," he said, "well then, I hope so too." Any story of our family must include the very special celebrations of Christmas and Easter. The birth, the coming to earth of God's Son, and the death on the cross to pay for our sins and his marvelous resurrection. Now at the Forney School, there was where we went, and I was there 2 years, 2 terms, when Max and Joel were still going there to school. There was a program. We always had a Christmas program, and that was quite a celebration. We'd take things from home. We made presents for the teacher and drew names among the students. And sometimes somebody even brought a Christmas tree. And one year the teacher put candles, fastened candles to the branches of the Christmas tree. And when Santa Claus came ho-ho-hoing in from outside in his suit and began to reach under the tree to get out the presents to distribute, his beard caught fire on one of the candles. He exited very quickly and rolled in a snowbank, and I don't know whether he came back in and delivered any more or whether we just had to have somebody else pass out the presents. Now, they were, the parents, of course, always came to those programs. And then there were the neighbors, the bars, and neighbors who were invited to come. And they could squeeze themselves into the people's desks or sit on folding chairs. And then we had... The presents were passed out. Everybody had a good time. The kerosene lamp that we had brought from home was extinguished. Now, you aren't going to believe this, and I can hardly believe it myself thinking back. But when we came from home 2 miles in the Whippet sedan, for the Christmas program, and there was usually snow on the ground, it was 2 miles. Dad and Mother sat in the front seat and with Elsie probably between them, because Mother had to hold the Aladdin lamp so it wouldn't get bumped, and the other four of us in the back. with the presents that we were bringing for the teacher and the other students, and with a bushel of popcorn balls someplace in our laps. The shovel, the scoop shovel that Dad brought along in case that there was a snowbank that was too much for the car, was fastened to the outside back of the whippet. Nobody would ever have suggested making two trips from our house to the schoolhouse, the 2 miles, and making two trips with the car to get to the program. We attended church and Sunday school in the Methodist Church in Belvedere, and the church Sunday school or Christmas program was usually held on Christmas Eve. So Mother was never able to go because she had to stay home and fix dinner for the guests that were coming next for Christmas dinner. So Dad took the boys and me to the program. And one Christmas Eve, my cousin Henry Brindley and I were sitting side by side on the front pew with some other small children whose feet wouldn't reach the ground. And we became involved in an argument about which of us was going to be the tallest when we grew up. The taller we got, the louder we got. And till finally some narrow-minded teacher came and sat between us there. Now, Don was the conscience of our family, and he was mortified. He couldn't wait to get home and report to Mother what his little sister had done at the Christmas Eve program. Dad had a little different sense of humor, and I suspect he was a bit amused. At least he never said anything to me about my performance at the Christmas program. And I remember how Mother prepared for a house full of guests on Christmas Day. I am amazed. She had no electricity, no running water. Her cook stove was fueled with cobs or coal. She baked cookies, Christmas cookies, rolled out, cut out with cutters, baked in the oven, frosted with white frosting, and then colored candies on top. Everything that she made was done on that stove. The popcorn was popped in the big heavy skillet that had to be pushed back and forth on top of the stove, and a lid held on the top of it. And she made literally bushels of popcorn balls, popping the corn that way. She was a wonder, and the women of that day were. Nobody can even imagine what it was like to do the housework the way they had to do it. Mother also did a most of the sewing for Elsie and me and herself on a Treadle Singer sewing machine. She made our Easter dresses and our Christmas dresses. And she was such a good seamstress. But the Easter sunrise service, she was never able to attend that because she was busy getting ready for guests too. But we always had a new Easter dress. And then for the for the Easter's, the regular service, Mother usually tried to get them. But I remember the so-called Epworth League, the high school aged kids that had their own little social club, were in charge of the sunrise service. I remember that also they sang in the choir on at the regular services. Now, my brothers, Max and Joel, were not exceptional singers, but they were in the choir because the guy always sat in the chair behind the chair that his current girlfriend was sitting in. And nobody else sat behind Drew Drake, whatever, it was a choir up there.